afternoon, honorable members. Let me take this opportunity to officially open this meeting. Honorable High Judge, we've tasked herself to come and present this topic of today, because she is leading international relations, but besides that, she has been in the IPU and in the international relations. That's where many protocols are in that department. Let me take this opportunity to open this meeting, saying that this day is so important to us. After our 16 days of activism that we're all part of, that we closed in a good mood, that women were all attending, and even the minister was present and presenting our concept documents, and we went to Gauteng. I presented the multi-department caucus, delivered a paper, and then the closing, it was in Mpumalanga. In Mpumalanga, it was not well attended. There were reasons. Even in Mpumalanga itself, they were having some other events whilst we did go there. I know that different provinces, different legislatures, after the international one, they did have their own 16 days of activism. When we left it in that meeting, we've said this year we're going to have the strat plan, which was strat plan was scheduled for 14th of this month. According to the Office of House Chairperson, they've asked us to cancel because that day is set aside for Minister Trevor, that for the whole day he will be presenting his program. Let me take this opportunity to welcome Honorable Hajjaj, who's somebody who's going to give us some input in the discussion. So I'm saying, after that, I know that members, they've heard that last week, or before even they heard, they were aware that every year, March, there is United Nations Commission on the Status of Women in New York. It was a sixth session. It was unfortunately that it didn't come through this forum. Fortunately, my leader on my right hand side will confirm that the invitation, they did come very late on Wednesday afternoon. I was told that I will be part of the delegation, but my visa was not there until Saturday that we had to leave. I'm reporting this, saying that Honorable Mame was part of that, Honorable Ramudibe. But when we were there, we've decided no way that it happens again, that who were part of a parliamentary delegation who will attend this session, not coming back, giving report, not having a parliament in its own adopting the report. I'm raising this before even you ask, because we did go the tribute not having input from our parliament. We are promising that we are back. That conference is not yet over. It was for 2 weeks. We attended just for a week because the parliament agreed that we must go there for a week because this week the work is enormous in Parliament. As we're sitting here, we're preparing the report, and we're still waiting that those who left, it's not Parliament, it's ministers, was already been crafted that we'll call them in the multi-parliament caucus, and they've agreed to come and present what was going there in order that the committee of the women, status of women, children and people with disability, they will be presenting that report, and then it will be a parliamentary report. It has been not happening. We are committing ourselves that never again that happened, that we are not presenting. We can be ready with part of report because we didn't attend all the sessions, but what we've attended to, we cannot just present piecemeal report. So we'll be waiting that our ministers and deputy ministers who were there will arrange, we've agreed with two chairpersons that we'll arrange multi-parliament caucus a day, a full day, that they must come and we are also going to report. Today, our agenda is opening. I was doing opening remarks in order that I must not speak any longer. May I have apologies? Honorable Mabe, check us in.
Toronto Ramondino, she's not well. She's been put off by the doctor. And then I'm also going to request that I be excused in the next 10 minutes. There's a meeting that I need to attend and they need a quorum for that meeting.
Any other apology? Okay, any other one? King, please read them because that's the correct thing to read, the apologies. Those verbally, I cannot even ask whether you agree or not, but they are incorrect apologies. We need written apologies, but nevertheless, we cannot know what are you going to say. Great King.
Chairperson, I've got the following apologies that I need to give. It's for Honorable Mokopane Zulu Henrietta, Honorable Dube Christina, Honorable Fab Louisa, Honorable Kumalo Fiile, Honorable Kupai, Honorable Izwe Seniwe, Honorable Morotua Rosalia, and then Honorable Ramukile Dorothy Mapula, Honorable Sunduza Chandi Babadwa, and Honorable Chwete Pamela, and then one but not last, two, the Honorable Dwanambi Nosipo, Honorable Chemba Madisane Priscilla, and Honorable Sitwana, Honorable Tsemwane, Honorable Lulu Tsemwane. Those are the apologies that I give to the Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. We do appreciate in this forum that whoever is not going to be in this meeting, those apologies will assist us. We know that we are all leaders and we do have commitments, but please, I'm emphasizing each and every member of this forum must write an apology. We are so many members that just not come and not give us apology. Let's practice that. It will assist us as women of South Africa. Thank you so much. Thank you, Honorable Klengiwe. that once they accord your apology, you are with us. One other time we have appreciated that our ministers and deputy ministers, when they are with us, we're saying that we are thanking them. They are special, they are more than ours to be tied. So we are always saying that thanks, honorable ministers and deputy ministers, when you are with us. Let me take this opportunity to give to our honorable member, honorable high judge, that we have asked her to come and address this focus on international treaties and protocol related and empowering rural women and hunger and poverty. We have identified this topic because as we are sitting here, there are so many protocols and treaties that some of them are in our different committees, but we don't know, we don't discuss, we don't share. So that's why today we said she must come and present during the question time and comments any other things outside her presentation. We have allowed that you must ask and comment on whatever I've said before, but I don't want to take that time now. When he finished, you must ask questions in her responses, in her presentation, and then any other things that I've said, you are allowed to ask. Thank you so much. I know this is your sixth welcome. It's my fifth meeting today. Very early we've been meeting. Thank you that we are in this camp. We waited you, but we were aware that you are coming. To you, honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. And let me first of all welcome all of you to this caucus meeting, or the Market Party caucus meeting. I'm quite happy to see that I recognize at least one person from the opposition. It would have been nice if we had women from all the opposition parties. I think it's about time our parliament actually looks at that, because this is the 18th year of a democratic parliament, and we're still at the point of a multi-party women's caucus where only one member of the opposition attends. I don't think that's quite acceptable. Are you from the Metropole? Okay. So there's a few that's from Cook. Okay. Yeah, but but as I think, it would be nice if we as women of this parliament, irrespective of party, can actually come together on some points of consensus to take our struggle as women forward. Having said that, I've tried to distribute three pieces of documentation to you. The one is on the key international instruments on the rights of women. Do you think you have that one?
Yes.
Okay. And the other one is the empowerment of rural women. That's the document I'm going to speak to. And then there's a last two-pager or one-and-a-half-pager on a particular system in a particular developing nation and how rural women are organizing themselves. If you don't have the documents, we'll make sure that you get them by the end of this session. First of all, I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very glad that our chair of caucus has invited me to address this issue. To start with, I can't say how important this topic is. The majority of people in this country and in other African countries form the majority of the population. In our country, about 52% of the population are women. And somehow or the other, we get sidelined along the way. And one of the major areas that our women are sidelined in the rural area. This is despite the fact that at Podesa we made sure that women will be women's issues will be mainstreamed in every aspect of political life, in all its laws, legislation, and its implementation. Now, if we are true to ourselves, that has not actually happened. We have tried on a number of occasions to even have a women's budget to see how women are actually being empowered in terms of the budget that is passed every year. So we as women have a long way to go still. The fact that we are here and there are few countries in the world that have a number of women in parliament as we have, in terms of implementations for the ordinary women on the ground, I think have not worked out the way we would have liked them to work out. We at CODESA, as you know, one of the main stumbling blocks was also the fact that it was also the customary law and traditional leaders. We tried to deal with those issues, but somewhere along the line, some of the issues were sidetracked. So you find in the rural areas that women that were promised certain things, it doesn't really happen because traditional authorities are still very strong in some of the areas. And we need to be cognizant of it, and we need to deal with that. Going back to the paper on the background, on December 1977, the United Nations General Assembly adopted a resolution proclaiming a United Nations Day for Women's Rights and International Peace to be observed on any day of the year by member states in accordance with the historical and national traditions. The UN General Assembly took the view that the adoption of such a resolution would achieve the following. A. Recognize that securing peace, social progress, and full enjoyment of human rights and fundamental freedoms requires the active participation, equality, and development of women. In other words, it's saying that without women, there cannot be peace and social progress and full enjoyment of human rights. B, acknowledge the contribution of women to the strengthening of international peace and security. It is important to note that although the resolution for the observance of International Women's Day was adopted by the United Nations General Assembly in 1977, the United Nations began celebrating 8th of March as International Women's Day in 1975. The global theme alters yearly, and the theme is often identified and developed internationally to serve as a guide for the national events and debates. The theme for International Women's Day 2012 is Empower Rural Women, End Hunger and Poverty. The theme speaks to the empowerment of rural women for poverty and hunger eradication, sustainable development, and accelerated progress towards achieving internationally agreed development goals such as the Millennium Development Goals. The theme for this year is important for two reasons. First, rural women are leaders, decision makers, producers, workers, entrepreneurs, and service providers who contribute to the local and national economy. Rural development, agriculture, and household livelihoods and their contribution to economic growth and development is a prerequisite for economic growth and development. I think that's a very, very important statement. And I think that many times we do not realize the importance of rural women, not only in South Africa, but in all of Africa. Studies have shown women in most African rural areas work on average, they work for longer hours than their male counterparts. In countries like Benin and Tanzania, for example, rural women work respectively 17.4 and 14 hours longer per week than rural men. Globally, more than a third of the female workforce is engaged in agriculture, and according to recent statistics released by the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, 60% of employed women in sub-Saharan Africa are in the agricultural sector. And these statistics comprise of farmers on their own account as unpaid laborers on family farms or as paid or unpaid laborers on other farms. In most African countries, rural women are the primary food farmers and therefore grow most of African food. Including food for subsistence and food for local and international markets. More so, women in most rural areas also bear the burden of domestic work and caring for their families. As such, women in rural areas do not only contribute to the economic development of the respective communities, but they also assume the responsibility for ensuring the welfare of their families. Here I want to point out, colleagues, one of the, as we said here, the paper says 60, I think between 60 and 70%, in some countries it's 70%, that women farmers produce for the food security of that state. We have now a problem. Most of the exports go to Europe, that these women work for. Now, the Europe has decided, before they had a particularly preference regime for developing nations, they're trying to close that gap with the EPA, the Economic Partnership Agreement. That means that all the markets in Africa will be open to European produce, and similarly, European markets should be open for African produce. Now, unfortunately, it's not working like that. Because, first of all, because of the huge subsidies in European, on European, by European, to European farmers from their state, our farmers, our women farmers, cannot compete with the prices. Although our women were harder and longer, and the produce that they produce is cheaper, but because of the subsidies in Europe by two European farmers, we cannot compete in the European market. So we need to relook at these issues. So what happens is that even if we produce, we're unable to export to the export market in Europe. Secondly, the population of the developing world is still more rural than urban. To be precise, 3.1 billion people, or 55% of the world's total population, lives in rural areas, and women comprise a significant proportion of the total rural population. Moreover, approximately 1.4 billion people are living on less than $1.25 US dollar per day. And more than close to 1 billion people are suffering from hunger. At least 70% of the world's very poor people are living in rural areas. Rural poverty, and this is across the board from all countries, rural poverty is often attributed to a lack of assets, limited economic opportunities, poor education and capabilities, and disadvantages arising from social and political inequalities. And no segment of rural society experiences the burden of rural poverty and hunger like rural women. Now, the challenges to the empowerment of rural women. The empowerment of rural women means providing rural women with first education and means to enable them to fully participate as equal citizens in the economic and political development of society. This empowerment further entails enabling and allowing rural women to fully participate in the development, implementation, and macroeconomic policies. National participation of rural women in the development process has been the subject of much debate in international forums, such as the 1995 Nairobi conference, the Beijing Declaration for a Platform of Action, and the United Nations Development Fund for Women. The philosophy of these forums is for countries to promote the economic independence of women through the creation of employment, access to resources and credit, and the eradication of persistent burden of poverty, malnutrition, poor health, and illiteracy of women. Dear colleagues, the access to resources. Now, when you are a rural woman and you are working on the field to provide for food for your family on the table and possibly for export, the thing is, when you go to ask for credit, the first thing the banks are going to ask you, or whoever is a lender is going to ask you, what is the collateral? What collateral are you going to put down? So what does a rural woman have as collateral? Very little. So we need to find a way where we make it possible for rural women to get loans at a very, very low interest rate. We have to try and devise, and this has been done in other countries. For instance, in Bangladesh, they had the Hrameen Group where they provided small loans to rural women to provide for themselves, and most of the 99% of the women didn't renege on their loans. They paid back their loans and they built up their what they were producing and their businesses accordingly. The empowerment of rural women is, however, constrained by a number of factors, and one such factor is the lack of access to credit, to decent and productive rural employment and non-agricultural income generating activities. Even though more than a third of the world's female workforce is engaged in agriculture, most of these women are employed in low productivity jobs, working on small farms or on family-owned farms as paid or unpaid laborers or running small enterprises. The involvement of rural women in non-agricultural income generating activities and decent employment is often constrained or restricted by factors such as unequal access to resources, such as credit, as I mentioned. More often than not, constraints to women producers gaining access to financial resources are policy, legal and cultural barriers such as customary laws which prevent women from accessing credit without their husband's consent. Now, our constitution, and at CODESA we discussed this issue, and we have in our laws that a woman has a right to contract in her own right. She has a right to do that as an individual. But the policies of apartheid somewhere still stays in the psyche of our people. That the husband has to co-sign, or the father, or the brother, or something of the sort, or the chief of the. So we need to re-look. We have the laws in place, but we need to look at the implementation of those laws as far as rural women is concerned. Also in terms of customary law, I remember very, very clearly that we discussed the issue of land for women. Our law says very clearly that land must be made available to women, and women have a right to the land of this country. But we find that some of the old habits still remain in rural areas. Women don't have the right to own the land because the communal land is governed by the chief, by the traditional leader of that area. So we need to re-look at those things. Because our laws are in place, but it's not happening for our women. So we need to re-look at them. And nobody is better equipped than us here. Our people send us to this parliament to assist in changing their lives. So it puts a mandate on us. We have a mandate. We have a job to do. We have a responsibility to our people, especially our women. Rural women further lack access to formal and non-formal education and informal education in many parts of the world. Constraints for rural women in accessing non-formal education and informal education are driven by religious, political, social, and economic factors. Girls and women in rural areas often have limited access to education than boys and men because of the added household responsibilities, and this means that they are involved in informal rather than formal employment. The lack of basic skills like literacy, numeracy, and negotiating power prevents most rural women from accessing all the available employment or business opportunities. Now, in our urban areas, we have, thank God, we found in the basic education that there are more girl children that are attending our schools. This is good news. But many times, and in high schools too, but although at some point many girls drop out. And the reason they drop out is they have to assist with chores in the home. Now this is exacerbated in the rural areas. Because the system of the family working together as a unit. And usually the girl child is pulled out of school or doesn't go to school when the crops have to be gathered or whatever. Or they simply go to school or for part of the time. Or they don't go to school at all because they have chores to do to help the mother in the household. Now we need to actually begin to look at it from the educational point of view. Because education is the cornerstone of building a strong economy. Rural women are still excluded from important decision-making roles in the community. In fact, the voice of rural women is weak, and so is their representation in local decision-making bodies. This is because traditionally women in rural areas have been regarded as people who belong at home, tending to the needs of their husbands and children, but when it comes to making local economic and political decisions, men take the lead. Most rural women do not have access to land, even in South Africa. Land is not only an economic and productive resource, but also a source of status and recognition. The main barrier, I've just been told, I would like to just finish this quickly, it won't be long. I think what I'll do, I'll skip some of the things. I'm not going to deal with the Millennium Development Goals, you all know that. I'm going to just cross over to the empowerment of rural women. What can we do? It says here, the international commitments briefly discussed about, which are aimed at empowering rural women, mean very little if practical measures ensuring the empowerment of rural women are not put in place. However, it is important to note that the responsibility to ensure that rural women are empowered does not only lie with government. It also lies with the international and regional organizations, rural organizations, women's organizations, farmers' organizations, cooperatives, which I think is a very important aspect, which is just getting off the ground as far as our rural women are concerned, and the private sector. Below is some of the measures that we need to take to ensure that rural women are fully empowered. A, the integration of a gender-sensitive approach or perspective into rural governance. Processes such as policy making, public administration, service delivery, and in all rural development and agricultural policies and programs. 2. The revision, review, amendment, or abolishment of laws and policies that discriminate against rural women and girls, including those related to land and natural resources, ownership, family, marriage, inheritance, housing, property rights, and legal capacity. The consideration of the successes of rural women in designing and implementing policies related to issues facing rural communities such as poverty and hunger. The establishment of strong and adequately resourced gender equality units at senior levels in the relevant ministries such as the agriculture and local government. And there I would like to suggest that although we're supposed to have gender units in all our ministries, in our departments, we don't always get a report of what is actually happening, what those gender units are actually doing, and the rate of success in promoting perspectives of gender mainstream and gender equality. I think perhaps we should also look at something common constructive as in some departments, especially land, rural development, where there's specific units to assist women, rural women. Their task would be that we need to find a budget for that, that they would deal with the problems of rural women in agriculture. We can discuss this further. And I would really like to hear from the committee on land and also agriculture of how we can take the thing forward. The development of outreach programs to ensure that rural women and men are aware of their rights and the role of responsibilities of national and local governments in safeguarding these rights. The support of women actors in the agricultural sector and facilitating the access of these women to infrastructure, including transportation, information, and technology. The increase of rural women's access to financial services, I think this is of paramount importance. Designing financial products targeted at rural women and providing rural women with access to financial literacy training. The establishment and development of cooperatives and other structures that should ensure knowledge sharing and dialogue among rural women. I think this is a very important tool, can be a very important tool, the promotion of cooperatives. The expansion of opportunities for decent agriculture and non-agricultural employment for rural women and the introduction of non-agricultural income generating activities for rural women. The full participation of rural women and rural women leaders in key decision making and budget allocation process at all levels of government and rural institutions. The creation of measures aimed at increasing the number of women in leadership positions in agricultural organizations and other rural-based organizations. Now, we have said that we want to see women at all levels of decision making, from the village right up to the national parliament. Is this actually happening? The allocation of adequate financial resources in national budgets for the economic empowerment of rural women. In conclusion, it is apparent that rural women are the key to food security. Because they make up a significant share of the world's agricultural producers and thus play a crucial role in feeding their families and nations. It is further clear that in recognizing the crucial contribution of rural women to economic growth and development and taking into account their needs at all levels, governments and other key organizations shall invariably increase the productive capacity of rural women and further unleash a need in rural women to make an even greater contribution to the development of the community. I thank you. There's just two issues I want to raise before we take questions with your permission, Madam Chair. Is that I remember going on that time when we still had the two China issue and we had to decide which China People's Republic of China or the Republic of China is going to be our international partner. So I was sent there to part of the delegation to go and look at the various issues. What I found, and I was very thrilled about it, was went into the rural areas. And of course, the main crop in China in that particular area was rice. So wherever you saw was rice plantation. But the rice, because the winters are very, very severely, very, very cold in some parts of China, they can't grow rice like through the year. So they had a season for rice growing. And then most of them sat idle for the winter months. So they came up with a plan. They decided to form small, they established small factories. For instance, they would package soap powder, or they would make cleaners, cleaning materials, very low industrial that wouldn't require huge machinery and all of those things. But they established those small enterprises, and they worked at that during the cold months. So they had an income from those enterprises in the winter months, and of course they had an income from the rice in the hot months, because rice needs a lot of water and a lot of heat. So there's nothing to stop us in looking at some of international best practice. In terms of empowerment of women, as you know, India is a developing nation. It has a population, we're talking of huge populations. China is like 1.3 billion, and India is like 1.2 billion. If you think 50% of them are women, so we're looking at something, huge figures, I can't even think about, but we are looking at 50 million only. They introduced, and I think there is one page, I think, on a system that they introduced to give women decision-making powers in the village in India, in the village of India. Now, knowing and remembering that India is a very, very patriarchal society, they still managed to empower women at that level. And that has only grown from strength to strength. So these are some of the examples that we can look at, we can find out more about it, and maybe go and see how this works, and whether we can actually adopt that, whether we can make changes, because what we know for sure, and in uncertain terms, is the fact that we need to empower our women, especially rural women. And 18 years down the line, we haven't managed to do that, and we need very seriously to ask ourselves why, what are the obstacles, and how do we go forward. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. As you have seen that we still have challenge of time, she couldn't finish all what she was supposed to present. We still have a challenge, and fortunately, she's a part of the office that we have mandated us to ask enough time for this committee. It was presented in the People's Forum that sometimes we must have an open Wednesday dedicated for this committee. I'm going to give everyone an opportunity to comment, to raise questions, but I'm suspecting that as we are sitting at this Women's Caucus, we are committing ourselves to make sure that women's issues, we are placing them firmly in our agenda, as in the parliamentary work, in order that we must domesticate some of the protocols, the everything that's in the protocols, in order that we must achieve what we are always saying, the monitoring, the implementation. violation of our laws without us coming here and witness and take up the laws that we are thinking that will assist those rural women, not reading, not passing the laws, but if we can come in the multi-part women's focus, sharing the strategies of monitoring and checking how to monitor and coming back to different committees that you are suspecting that the implementation can be ABC. So these comments that Omama in at the end were proposed as a committee that through the system of parliament that I'm proposing that we must change that. We don't have enough privilege to visit. They were saying that per year we must go with the committee, one international, one Africa, like we've got in Mauritius, that they are doing well because they do have in Malta and the ministry, we have Uganda, we have India, but we cannot as committees at large of parliament because of our body to go and study those things that are done by other countries. Let me give you this opportunity, saying that today we have this opportunity. Was on Tuesday we are going to have a debate on the International Women's Day, but at least the background that we are getting here, it's about the international women's concept and the theme that even the UN was taking the same thing, the theme of empowering rural women and hunger and poverty. Can I take the hand? Thank you so much. Mama, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Let me also welcome you, honorable ministers, to join us. We've said when we were not yet in, when we're honoring honorable other minister, that in your schedules, you must remember this caucus. We need your input. We need even you to tell us that one other day you want to come and present what you are doing in your department, in order that women must get informed and go and implement whatever you are doing.
Thank you, Chair. I think this was a very enticing topic, because why I'm saying this, it seems when we are here, sometimes we can't even assist our own women at home, because some of the things we don't know, especially like the treaty that we used to sign when we are outside that are assisting women, but we have never heard about them. What more about the women in the rural if we don't understand? But what I want to say is what Honorable have already mentioned, that some parties, in Bangladesh, you said they assist the women. When we have the women ministry in our head, we were thinking that the things that we wanted for the women at home and the rural women, they will be able to get some security money when they wanted to do something, but that is not the case. And then we also, in your presentation, you mentioned also the rural women. There are mushrooming NGOs that situated somewhere in the urban. When they go out to the government, they said they are representing women in the rural, only to find that they are representing their own target. Then I was saying, as women here, we must guard against, and then we must be jealous of those women, because we are their voices. They can't raise their voices because they are not here. And then some of us, we don't know them. So really, I said because of time, I've got so many questions, but because of time, Chairperson, I was just commenting. I think you will negotiate, because sometimes this little time, it makes us not to say what we wanted to hear or to address. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Number two.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, women issues, I think they are cross-cutting, they are transversal issues that are cutting across all the departments. But what I want to indicate, I think we're deprived by time because we have to discuss these issues thoroughly so that we can go back to our constituencies and ask them. But, Chairperson, I think there are many projects that are taking place in rural areas, but some of those projects, they lack the support. And the challenges, we know that the challenges, you find that even if women are being funded to start a certain project, but the challenge is the issue of marketing and also mentoring and monitoring, so that at the end of the day, we babysit that particular project until a specific time frame where we're sure that they can be able to sustain themselves. But I think now we'll be busy with the budget. I don't know whether are we doing enough to check that those budgets presented to us address the issues of women. Are they gender friendly? Because we're talking of men and women, but the people who are mostly, you know, deprived are the women. So I think we need to make sure that when looking at this annual performance plan, which are linked to the budget, to make sure that those budgets really address the issues of women. I think also in our municipalities we've got LEDs. I don't know to what extent does the LEDs address the issues of women, especially in rural areas, because those are the local economic development units that are funded to make sure that rural areas or all the areas, the local areas, are economically developed. The Department of Agriculture has established what we call the WAD, Women in Agricultural Rural Development. But I'm not sure to what extent really are we assisting those women, because there's a structure that has been established to make sure that rural women, you know, are being empowered to make sure that they plow, you know, there's food for subsistence and also for local commercial. Rural development has started this CRDP program, the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, which is trying to make sure that, you know, women are accommodated in those programs. But Chairperson, due to time, I think we need to have enough time so that we discuss these issues that are
Number three.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to Honorable Hajit for the very informative paper, almost like a revival of what needs to actually happen. I just appreciated your concluding remarks. That we need to actually ask ourselves very seriously what are the obstacles. Because one imagines that when times like this come and we need to commemorate days for advancement of the basis of women and development of women, also what is important is really trying to make an audit. So that the country, we have actually done so much. You've given us international, regional, and sub-regional human rights treaties that we know as a country we have actually already ratified. That actually guides us in terms of domestication of our own legislation at home. We've done that. We've got programs that are running, but you know, when you actually start looking at the theme, then you actually wonder to what extent have we made progress. Of course, we do realize all of those problems that are mentioned, but what is of most importance would be to be in the position to know where we are and to be in the position to put our finger if things are not working out, exactly where are we having problems and what strategies are actually being put in place in order for us to really manage to address those issues. It's really indeed high time that we make the legislation that we've got that is ready to empower and advance the women of South Africa to really work for us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Number four.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. I will be brief because
most comrades have articulated issues, but first I would like to thank the Honorable Hafiz for the presentation. I just wanted to say, you know, for me, it's like really South Africa, of course, based on our constitution to start with, all that's the cover of whatever we want to do. And of course, the fact that you are the signatory to most of these instruments is added advantage. But I'm not sure whether, in terms of our everyday practice, in terms of policy formulation, whether we consciously articulate this aspect as a special category. Because, you know, sometimes even when you read what we are saying, people cannot separate poor women and rural women. In my understanding, when we talk about rural women, we talk about women who could be poor, who could be middle class, who could be this, but who are facing specific barriers. So, which means we must make this a special category and say, what is it that needs to be done to help these women to make a job? Because even if you are a rich woman, you are farm, if you are in an area where you can't access water, you cannot, not because you cannot afford, but mainly because of infrastructural barriers, then it means there are gender-specific issues that you have to deal with. So just there, I think we need to have clarity about what we're talking about. But also, a little bit of gender values here, comrades, are very, very important. The Jefferson, when opening up, said when there was this UN CSW, I got a message laid and so on. If we knew the theme was on rural women, we should have known how many women are taken mainly because of their everyday exposure to those issues. They could be here, but they are here because that's where they come from. So those are some of the doable things that we have to constantly interrogate on a daily basis and say, how truthful are we in dealing with the issue first as women, before even we look at a bigger group. And then just a concrete thing, MPs pass strategic planning documents. In my own department, in talking with it, since I joined the Department of Higher Education, there's no obvious barrier. But when looking at it, I kept on saying, but what am I going to do for women? What am I going to do for rural women? The strategic concrete is critical because it commits the department as to what this is going to be done, and it attaches the budget. If the issue of rural women is not elevated, it won't just happen overnight. So those, there are concrete things within our competences, comrades, which I think if we conscientiously make it our mandate to say we will deal with it decisively, we could begin to see some progress gains. Taking issues into your number game, convention, everything, but saying concretely, how do we take it, this elephant in the house? Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Member. Number five.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. I also want to appreciate the input that was made, although I came somewhere in between, and indeed it inspired me. And like a Bible, we need this reflection. I just want to make just a few points about things. Firstly, that we need to have continuity in our work and our commitment towards empowering women. And in having continuity, we need to start by putting on the table what progress we have made. And what I want to propose is that the Women's Caucus should work very closely with the Portfolio Committee on Women, Children, and People with Persons with Disabilities. Because they call all of us to come and account on how we domesticate this
our efforts so that we are able then to move forward faster and together. We also know that government has five priorities, 12 outcomes, but now President Kusona has just announced the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee project. We must then ask ourselves, the minister's announced budget. We must then interrogate so that this caucus then calls the Finance Portfolio Committee to account here. How is the budget, by the way, responding to the issues of women? The PICC to say, is there a plan to ensure that there's equal access by both men and women to this opportunity? So I think we need to get into a higher gear to look at how we then count the steps we have established and how we'd like to on the progress as a whole. The AU declared 2010 to 2020 the decade for women. It would be very sad when there is a review and then it's found that South Africa was not responding to it, because it actually tries to consolidate all the international treaties for the region. And last year, I know one of the focus areas, well, not the least, I think one of the focus areas was on maternal mortality, the pregnancy related death. And this is one of the major problems in rural areas. Rural women have to even walk long distances to get transport, sometimes they're transported by vans and all that. So I think we need to not only look at what is happening elsewhere, but also interrogate whether we make some progress locally. That's the first point. The second point that I want to make is that there are areas that, appreciating also the contribution of the Deputy Minister and Kate, there are areas that are neither purely rural, because they are not on arable land, amongst others, neither are they urban, because they don't have urban infrastructure. They are just, and that's the legacy of apartheid. People have just been, put in areas where they labor reserves and whatever, the winter fields of the day, where people are just in the middle of nowhere. Just maybe not to take a long time, I think we also need to look at how we also look at the plight of women in those areas. And lastly, I want to make this point that women who are in positions of power, although we don't always appreciate the power that we have, we shouldn't isolate ourselves from ordinary women. And that is the first biggest mistake we make. My understanding when the Progressive Women's Movement of South Africa was formed, as part of the celebration of the 50th anniversary, that was a commitment of progressive women in our country to work together, across class, across urban-rural divide, across whatever status. And that's how we can empower rural women or women, ordinary women, and how they can also empower us to know what are real obstacles, so that we don't only depend on the poor. And my understanding also is that the multi-party forum was supposed to be members of the PWMS to ensure that that platform enhances the lives of women in South Africa. I just thought that I should say that not only at the national level, but also the provincial level, and also at the local government level. So I hope that we'll also look at how women who are privileged like us, on a day-to-day basis, are involved in the struggles of ordinary women, so that our work here can be sharpened in terms of its relevance. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Number six.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think this was a very provocative topic, especially the case study of the Sanchi Advantage system. And I think if I as I was listening to Comrade Ajaj's input, that the solution to rural poverty is not complicated at all, actually, very straightforward. And sometimes we tend, as policymakers and lawmakers, we tend to complicate issues. So one challenge I think I would like to raise is the issue of monopoly in the rural economy, which also forms a barrier to rural into your especially your commercial sector. If you look at certain agricultural sectors in South Africa, you would have families and conglomerates actually looked at the aspect of refrigeration, actually monopolizing refrigeration in certain areas, which then proves to be a barrier to people, especially black farmers, wanting to enter the commercial market. Now, I want to support your comment earlier, Chairperson, on the fact that we have, as Parliament, we have to prepare ourselves adequately when we go to international conferences. In this case, you mentioned the 56th Commission, the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. I think for the next session we do, but also for other commissions. As social development, we have access to quite a broad range of research institutions in South Africa. And I want to propose that the multi-party Women's Caucus look at inviting research institutions that deal with poverty, the making of social policy, and also that also deals with human rights issues around women, to come and make presentations on their positions and their perceptions, but also in terms of the research they have done around women and poverty. I think that would also give the women in Parliament also another perspective.
Number 7. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the wonderful input that you got. The question was, how far did we go? I would answer that question by saying we are nowhere. We haven't gone far. We haven't gone anywhere. People are still where they were in 93. Because why our women organizations, when they come together today, they don't empower. We don't empower our women. The thing is, as women, we are very, 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 very serious about the pull-down syndrome. And fear is amongst us. That is why we cannot empower women back at home. I think if we can just get rid of that, we will be fine. And the other one is about the one of the NGOs. That one, Comrade has spoken here, to say they are mushrooming, and they always say we are for you women, and yet it's for everybody, not for the rural women. The rural women is only for them to draw their reports. That's all. The poor women are suffering back at home, and I think it's time that we must have self-introspection and see how far and what are we doing. Thank you so much.
Now let me take this opportunity to give the presenter, and I'm looking at time in order that she must have chance to respond. I've taken note of that we don't have enough time in order that if we still have a few minutes, we'll take other hands, but so far at least about 7 members that asked and contribute and comment. Honorable Hajjaj.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the 7 people, in fact all of them have been comments. There hasn't really been a question, but I just like to talk about some of the issues that were raised. I think that as the Second Minister of Health has said, we need to interrogate the budget by bringing somebody here to explain. I would like to go one step further and say that when we sit at our meeting to the beginning of the budget season, all of us sit in different committees. When we interrogate the budget, we need to interrogate it. What does that budget do for the progress of women in this country? Let us make it a standard question. All of us here must ask that question. And let us see what comes out of that. And let us not take no for an answer. We need to know. It's taxpayers' money. We want to know. Women are part of the taxpayers' pool. So we need to ask the question, what is in this budget that's going to empower women or assist women or in their progress? That's the one thing. The other thing I think we need to ask, when we deal with legislation, that in all legislation, we need to look at what provisions are there in that legislation that will make the lives of our women better. Now, those are enormous tasks, comrades and friends. You know, but we need to be serious about that. When we look at legislation, we mustn't just sit back and let the officials explain the legislation and ask a few questions and that's that and adopt it. We need to ask the question at every piece of legislation. Every piece of legislation, whether it's in defense or agriculture or international relations or whatever, we need to ask the question, what does this piece of legislation do for the women of South Africa? How does it empower the women of South Africa? So as legislators here, we have a specific task as women legislators. That's the one thing. And in terms of continuity, I think that's very, very important, the working closely with the Department of Women. Now, there's two issues that I want to bring up here. First of all, there's a gender unit in each department. So far, I've never seen a report from that gender department on exactly what progress they have made, what are the issues, what are the barriers, what is the problem, and how they have succeeded. So we know what the gender units of this in the department is doing. So perhaps at some stage we need to ask the heads of the gender units of each department to come and explain to us what are the challenges, if there are any, what have they done, how have their work been incorporated into the wider scope of that department. So we, because there is a budget for those gender units, what are they actually doing? Right. The other issue that I want you to bring is that in terms of the reports, the women's report, the CEDAW report that goes to the CEDAW, and the APRM report in terms of the women, how is it possible that we as parliamentarians don't see that report that goes to CEDAW? We don't see it. It's done in our name, but we don't see it. We don't discuss it. We don't see it. It's sent off, and I think that's not acceptable. There are three tiers of government. Despite the separation of powers, that doesn't mean that Parliament doesn't have a right to look at that report, which is sent off in its name to CEDAW or whatever. And the same thing with the APRM. I think when the report goes, we need to look at it and see how women issues are dealt with in the APRM country report. So that, I thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Let me take this opportunity to say that this is the beginning
and we're hoping that we will always do what we started to do. I can respond that what is there, but we need to go and monitor whether in your province that what is there, and the department of the ministry is assisting that what they were part even of a delegation to NGOs. There are those NGOs that are working, there are those that they will go there, not even one structure in your province. Also, we are working together with the department, the minister. Two chairpersons are sitting in the steering committee. Even we are ready preparing for the coming meeting that will be calling all the ministers who are part of this UN. Because in the UN, I'm suspecting that I'm putting this, that Parliament needs to be invited. As we're sitting here, we're invited by the minister. But when we get, it was my first time to go, when we get there, there is IPU, a parliamentarian union, that who has been presenting us if that this thing, this is the 56th year thing session, who has been presented us. We are not saying that ministers, they don't have role, as we are saying, but we have seen that we need to come and report and ask, because if forums are different forums, there are forums that where ministers are sitting, and then who have been sitting for us. And that's why we are saying, together with the ministry, both chapters who have agreed that the report was already prepared, and we are waiting for the final report, that it must come to Parliament, in order that the Parliament must adopt, in order that the Parliament must send a delegation to this, because even NGOs are there, but the Parliament is not there. For instance, there were policies saying that if you have been invited by a minister, the minister is supposed to take care of the cause, but it was not happened just now. We're supposed to be invited as members of Parliament, but I don't know who's supposed to do that. As we're sitting here, we're going to go to the relevant offices, that parliamentarians need to be part of those UN commission sessions. So that's what we've noticed, and we're putting in this forum that we look on it. But the thing that some of our ministers are proposing, no, we are working with the department, but we'll ask all chairperson in the department to come to multi-department caucus. Those reports that they are having, they are there for a committee, but we are not all sitting in these different committees. We'll ask each and every important minister and ministry to come and give a report, and sometimes we need not even to ask, let's have a problem, whom are we started with in the multi-department caucus, to come with the programs of each ministry to be tabled here, in order that we must run with them. We must monitor the budget that you have, that how far with our counterpart, which is provincial caucuses, how far are they gone, the legislatures, how far are they gone in municipalities. Because this women's caucus, as we're sitting here, many municipalities this coming week, they are launching the multi-party women's caucus. They've seen from the legislature that they can get even a national coming to say, as we are saying, that these customer roles, you know, that we've taken this ukutwala and we've achieved, and it's with the UN that East South Africa has achieved the ABC. So I'm saying that I'm seeing this caucus as a vehicle of its delivery, irrespective of what political party, irrespective of what department. If we can consistently coming, but asking an extension of time. With these words, I wanted that those that they wanted to raise questions, not today. We're trying to ask
a full day that will be discussing this UN report. But this UN report, it's having a topic like this International Women's Day, which means these issues of gender will be on that session where everybody will be knowing in time, trying to check whether the office of or chairperson must not schedule the meeting. Would love that our minister, deputy ministers, if they are not committed on that day, but those whom will be invited, they must try to set their diaries free. Umamu Hajjaji, before I must close, wanted to say something.
Just very quickly, colleagues. I think, first of all, that women's meeting that happened in New York, first of all, it was an invitation to the ministry, the minister. The minister, out of her own, decided that she would like to take some parliamentarians with her in the delegation. She didn't have to, but she decided she would like to take them. It was a two-week meeting. The first meeting, the second day, or first week, was for politicians. The second week was for officials. Therefore, they only went to the first part of the meeting. The second thing that I would like to say is that we, as the caucus, women's caucus, must decide on one or two items for the year and just run with that. It's no use discussing this, that, and the other, and then not getting anywhere because we don't finalize anything. Mm-hmm. If we want to run with rural women this year, I think that would be excellent. We mm-hmm. concentrate all our efforts ongoing so that at the end of 2012, we say we have made a dent in the problems of rural women. That is my advice. I don't know if that's logical. The other thing that I want to just say that this caucus, with all due respect, is that the committees of parliament have oversight over the departments and the ministries in South Africa. This caucus cannot call the executive to come and this caucus doesn't have oversight over the work of departments. We can ask them, and they can actually oblige us if they so wish to. There is a separation of power. The only people who have power to call them to account are the committee. And there's no reason why we can't do so. We can call our ministers to account in the committee. Thank you.
Except that we're not saying they must come in account. They must share because they are women. We'll call women parliamentarians. That's why they do attend. We know exactly that you are not a ministry. They can't come in account. We've asked them that they've even agreed that they come and share being members of the multi-partners caucus. We are clear about that. We'll ask them because they've agreed. Some of them, they are knocking at the door that they want to share with women. That's why you cannot call the Committee of Finance to come and table. But if a woman chairperson wants to come and share, wants information in order that you must run with it. With those words, thank you very much. But almost I judge, let's see this thing that if Parliament is not being invited because politicians in the first session are parliamentarians also, but I'm sure we'll discuss with the leaders how are we going to, if the minister was not invited, as we're supposed not to be there. You do have something?
One of our steering committee
I'm happy that now we are happy. She has been not happy, but she's from our opposition. We want to assist them about this 50-50. She's always with us in the breakfast. I was so happy that the senior member of the party, Ms. Dean, stayed there, and I've seen that they've enjoyed what now we've started to move and do as a caucus. Because without all women of parliament, nothing that we can achieve. Thank you so much. The meeting adjourned. Appreciating the full house.
Thank you.